Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Today I'd like to say something about freedom. I tend to like to do that around this time of year, something about freedom and Zen freedom. Freedom, of course, is one of our founding values in America. It comes up with some frequency. Freedom of an individual to make a choice about a religion or job or where to travel, or where to live, or speech. It's part of our national story. And Buddhism talks about freedom too. It's part of our story and part of our practice. Called freedom or liberation. Beings are numberless, I vow to liberate them. And so, what does that mean? Liberate how? Liberate from what? I think Zen practice is after a kind of freedom that is different, that is deeper than our general sense of freedom, and that is, I like to think of it as three-dimensional. So, chapter 3, I have this book that Hawk, what's Hawk's last name?
Jones.
Hawk Jones gave me. He's a Theravada Buddhist, from Ajahn Chah. He is a great read, and a great, very, most famous Theravadan, I think, in the West anyway, teacher of the 20th century. Chapter 3 of his collected works is collected teachings is Conventions and Freedom. It's a title. So he says, the things of this world are merely conventions of our own making. Having established them, we get lost in them and refuse to let go. This is a fundamental point, I think. One of the most fundamental truths of Buddhism, I think, is that we fail to see through the conventions that we make up. And the liberation that Buddhism talks about is, I think, at its basic, it's the liberation from this trap, of the trap of these conventions and conventional thinking. It's not liberation as in to hell with conventions. It's the liberation of being trapped in convention and not seen through it. That's different. I went back to North Carolina recently to visit my folks. Every morning I'd go for a walk with my sister. That was our exercise. And we could talk over, you know, problems with the folks. And we go through this park, and everybody we pass would say hello. Hey, good morning. And we'd say good morning, of course. And if once in a while, even if they have earbuds in, they'd do this. And once in a while, you know, somebody would come by and they wouldn't say anything, and we'd say, snob. That's the feeling you get. Now, in Norway, no one says good morning, ever. So two single people, this happened to me when I was pushing Lars, little kid, two single people on a street, you know, rural town, passed right by, Say hello, nothing. Good morning, nothing back. Because, you know, there, if you say good morning to somebody like that, it just looks weird. That guy's weird. What does he want from me? Trouble. He must be troubled or desperate. So if you've never left North Carolina or Norway, these conventions may seem like obviously the way human beings should act. But we know that's not true. That we know them to be just conventions, and to kind of understand them as conventions allows us to meet other people in different ways and not think certain things of them or not judge them too quickly. And I think there are other conventions that are pan-human. For instance, the status that we afford to the rich and the famous, that's a common human trait. Or the beautiful, even though the standards of beauty change over time. And there are deeper still human conventions, like, and now we're getting into the territory that's well trodden by Buddhists, like the way the language orders our world into objects and affects the way we think of those objects. We have a tendency to see objects and, importantly, to see ourselves in a way that is more reified and solid and stuck and fixed than is true, according to the Buddhist tradition. And we then get habituated to these conventions, whether it's a convention specific to our own tribe or more broadly to the human tribe, and we see them just as the way things are, and accept them on face value, rather than see them as a convention that we've all decided to adopt. So these patterns of thought, these conventions, have a way of cementing themselves into our consciousness. We have a name for that, at least for one of these congealers or cementers, which is confirmation bias, I think. That's a name that's come up just in the last, 30 years, 40 years. And now we can name it. I think it's a very powerful thing to be able to name something like that. I bet you the Buddha would say, yeah, that's right. I knew that a long time ago. The tendency we have to interpret new evidence as confirmation of one's existing beliefs. Whatever new evidence comes up, we tend to notice the things that confirm our own way of thinking, our own belief. Whatever comes up, we have a tendency to see the evidence that backs that up. So for instance, a good example from my life, maybe yours too, if you've been hurt by somebody, if you've decided somebody's a bad person, I tend to notice the bad things about that person. And that's what I tend to focus in on and notice over and over again. Oh yeah, that it's true, that guy really is a bad person. See, I was right. Or likewise, someone who's on our side or who's in our tribe, who's on our team, that person's a good person. It's hard not to do this. It's hard not to get pulled by that. And I think Zen practice helps us with it. It helps free us of that, of those forces, so that we can see things more clearly and consequently act more wisely and creatively, and less self-centeredly, even in this self-centered way that we don't even notice. And the way we do that in Zen is to get down to the root. In Zen, we get very quiet as we can, so quiet that we can't even hear ourselves think. and we get acquainted with what we call our no-self aspect, the self that doesn't have an opinion about anything, that doesn't have prejudice about this, that, or the other. The no-self aspect doesn't care. It doesn't have a stake in the outcome. It doesn't hold on to anything. It doesn't hold on to a perspective. And then when we get very, very quiet to a place where there are just where there are no words about anything, no names for things, no concepts or conceptual frameworks. Bodhidharma said that wisdom is, that the wisdom that is transmitted in Zen is not dependent on words or letters. And the Buddha said, you know, you have to practice seeing things as if they're fabricated by us, fabricated by our own thinking. Do you remember that, those chapters, the fabricated and the unfabricated? So back to Ajahn Chah, he says, the self, and this is something that Buddha really focused on, the self itself is a convention. It's a useful convention. It's one that we harden, we tend to harden into something solid, more solid than it really is. And Ajahn Chah says, rather than see it as a mix of things in flux, living and dying all the time. That's what the self really is. And we have a tendency to miss that because we take this shorthand, this kind of, lazy is a little bit harsh because we all do it, but it's a kind of lazy approach to who we are and who other people are. So we have these, I think it's worth saying also that we have to use these conventions. Like the self, like words, like concepts such as good and bad. And we have to learn to see through them, I think, as Zen practitioners. To see them for what they are, conventions, rather than fixed realities. And, I think Zen and Buddhism really... Maybe it's most helpful, I don't know if I can say this, but it might be true, that it's most helpful tool or most helpful thing that it can offer the world is being able to see through those conventions. And we do that together here at the Zen Center. We have to be careful, of course. We do it together. A Zen Center set up to see through these things, right? We have to be aware that we could ourselves be subject to groupthink about certain things. And I think we have to be, that's something that we have to be aware of. But essentially, we set up a kind of a place where it's okay to drop those conventions temporarily. We do it carefully. We set up a structure. It's one of the reasons we have, I think, the kind of form and ritual that we have, so that it's something that can catch us when we drop those. It's a safe place to do that. Dogen says, the monastic community is the most excellent of all things because those who live thus live beyond the narrowness of social fabrications. I love that construction, the narrowness of social fabrications. Social fabrications have a tendency to narrow our view of things. In a sangha, we have a chance to open that view up some and not buy into all of the social fabrications, begin to see through them. This is the practice of freeing ourselves from the grip of conventional thinking. That's the kind of freedom that we can offer here. The way there doesn't always feel like freedom. Kind of feels like prison, actually. you know, if you come to a retreat or you even just coming here for the first time or second time, you know, it's very prescribed and limited. What's this about? A wide view. And that's because it takes disciplined practice to cut through this conventional way of thinking. It's difficult. It takes time and discipline to think differently. It takes zazen, it takes reflection, it takes study, working with others, and also practicing applying it in our everyday life. So, I think this freedom from convention and conventional thinking and the pressures of conventions can lead to unusual kinds of freedom. And this is where I talk about this. I'm coming to the end now, where I talk about the fruits of this kind of freedom. One of the fruits is that it gives us the freedom just to be in this damn moment. Which is not something that we thought we were missing before we started practicing, I think. But something that comes up when we start to practice. We notice, oh, I can be relaxed with this moment just as it is. Without being pulled by the conventions of this world, by the conventions which have us thinking all the time about the future, about the past, about what to do next, about winning or losing. It gives us the freedom to be content for a minute and possibly to be grateful as well. You know, yeah. And as I said, we may not, I think in general, one doesn't appreciate this freedom, but until one sort of cuts the chains that drag us around, toward the future and toward the past, toward the better, toward the more exciting. And when you cut through those for the first time, you really feel that freedom just to be. It's like that Mary Oliver poem we read during the last retreat called The Sun. I won't read the whole thing, but it begins, have you ever seen anything more, have you ever seen anything in your life more wonderful than the way the sun every evening floats toward the horizon and into the clouds or the hills or the rumpled sea? That's how it starts. Have you ever seen anything so wonderful? And it ends, do you think there's any way, but it's called The Sun, yeah, I told you that. Do you think there is anywhere in any language a word billowing enough for the pleasure as it warms you? As you stand there empty-handed? Or have you too turned from this world? Or have you too gone crazy for power, for things? Funny way to say, turn from this world. We think of the world as the world of power and things. But that's what I mean by the convention, the conventions, the conventional thinking. And I think poets have a way in. To another world, to an unconventional way of thinking and of being. So, and this freedom doesn't only lead us to this kind of reverie and gratitude that Mary Oliver talks about. I think when it's coupled with practice, it can also lead to more effective, more thoughtful action in the world. I think this freedom from conventional thinking can and should lead us to a freer kind of movement that sees more quickly creative solutions, isn't bound by convention, and also is a less anxious presence in the world because we know this aspect of ourselves that doesn't need to be jerked around, that doesn't need to win or lose. And finally, I think this practice in the freedom department, I think this practice can and should lead us to be free to move between these two worlds of the conventional and the, in Buddhism we say the ultimate or the unconditioned. And I think about that as three-dimensional freedom rather than one-dimensional freedom. Freedom to be able to go both ways, to be able to see through conventions and also to use conventions. And I think the conventional idea of freedom, to choose this or that, is like a two-dimensional freedom, really. It's choosing between options on the horizontal plane to go here, there, pick or choose that. Whereas our practice adds this vertical axis. When, you know, like when, maybe you had this experience too, but I learned, it was very smart to ask my kids whether they would like carrots or peas for dinner. And they just wouldn't even think about the fact that there were other options. They were given a choice. I think that's like the conventional. Would you like this or that? And you don't even notice this other level. So there's a whole, I think there's a whole other dimension of freedom to be discovered, and I believe that Zen can help with that. Help you and I, and also help, in a way, give that to the world as well.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.